Today's April 18th, and we're on our next scheduled discussion of holidays in Tanakh. We have two more dates. Wednesday, May 16th will be Shavuot, just in time. And Wednesday, June 13th, will be perfectly situated to discuss Rosh Chodesh. That is Rosh Chodesh. So that'll be fine. So we have, today we'll be discussing Sfirat HaOmer and Pesach Sheni. So that's just where we are right now. Pesach Sheni will actually be a little more than a week from now. And I'd like to discuss the concept first. And it's really it's really a unique situation in the Jewish calendar. As follows. But before we get a chance to explain what Pesach Sheni is, which means a second Pesach, we have to just point out that Pesach is by far and away the holiday that's most broadly represented in the Bible. Besides the point that the Torah has references to it and its observance in numerous places, so that every day of Chol HaMoed, Pesach and Yontif, we have something else to read, as opposed to Sukkot, where the first 2 days you read the same thing. And then the rest of the holiday, we just read the Maftir, the day of Sukkot that's in Parshat Pinchas. There's hardly anything on Sukkot, but Pesach has representation all throughout the Torah, and in the Vayim Ksuvim as well. Right? There's a story of Yahushua observing Pesach. There's a story of Chizkiyahu observing Pesach, Yoshiyahu observing Pesach, Ezra, Nehemiah. It's to be sure, there's a story of Nehemiah observing Sukkot also, but nothing, it doesn't compare to the amount of time spent regarding Pesach. So, the Haftorah of the first day of Sukkot does mention Zechariah's invitation of the people to join him in a sukkah, but that invitation does not even seem to take place on Sukkot itself. It's just saying, if you want to be saved in the future, you better make sure that you celebrate Sukkot. I don't even know if that invitation came at the time of Sukkot. Right? You just said, make sure that the next Sukkot, you observe. And if you do so, you'll survive the purges or the suffering at the end of days. Really, you have to wait for it to warm up, I think, a little bit.
Sorry?
You have to wait for that to warm up a little bit, I think.
Oh, it's hot.
Oh, yeah, okay. Okay, so thank you. Thanks very much.
Sure.
Thank you. No, that's good. That's fine. Thank you. All right, so and then the second day of Sukkot is just the Haftorah talks about, and as well as the Shmini Atzeret, is just about the time of year. It doesn't say they were celebrating Sukkot. Right? It just says that at the time of the year of Sukkot, Shlomo HaMelech finished building the temple and he made a celebration, and right, which gives rise to something we said about 7 months ago. It says he celebrated for 7 days. It says that they mentioned Sukkot, and then it says afterwards that they had a 7-day celebration for the completion of the temple, right? And then they celebrated for 7 days for Sukkot. So the Gemara draws a conclusion that year they didn't celebrate Yom Kippur. They didn't fast on Yom Kippur. I didn't say they celebrated it. They had Yom Kippur, but they celebrated with festivities. So it's quite a remarkable claim in the Talmud that Shlomo was so happy of completing the temple that he decided to decree that there's no fasting this year. Who could think of someone doing something like that today? Right?
Sounds nice.
Okay. So I guess whoever gets to do that must be Moshiach, right?
Right.
All right. Sukkot is
at the high holidays.
Sukkot is not one of what we call the high holidays. So Sukkot is one of the pilgrimage holidays.
Pilgrimage,
right? Okay, where you have to take a pilgrimage to. Okay, so I have. Okay, we did Pesach last month, and I'm not sure why. Okay, so the anomaly of Pesach Sheni is that it's the only holiday where we get a do-over, right? Pesach Sheni means a second Pesach, right? If someone was Nebuch in a coma for all of Sukkot, and he did not observe Sukkot, he didn't get a little of an Esrog, he didn't get to sit in the Sukkah, why would anyone think that that person should celebrate Sukkot at a later time? By the way, maybe some of you know some scholarship on this very topic that, I mean, it's a little controversial, I'll admit, but it seems to be that the simple reading of the Book of Maccabees, that that's exactly what they did after they finished the war in Nisan, is the first time they had a chance to celebrate Sukkot that they did not. They took an 8-day holiday and lit candles and for like Simchat Beit Shoeva. I don't mean for this to detract from what Chanukah is, but if you recall, I mentioned this back in November or December when our holiday was Chanukah. Now Chanukah is a post-biblical holiday, so what can we talk about? We learned the Haftorah of Zechariah. If you recall, Zechariah refers to a futuristic time where you will almost run out of oil, but God will make sure that you have a never-ending supply of oil because there are two trees with many tubes leading into the two sides of the menorah. Remember, I showed you a picture of this before at the time. And that there will be rampant assimilation at that time, and the few will defeat the many. Zechariah, after saying these things, said, I don't know, God, what am I talking about? What is this? I don't get it. And God sends an angel to tell him that, you know, of course you don't understand what this is. It hasn't happened yet. You're prophesying it. All right, so that is sort of a do-over of a Sukkot, according to the Book of Maccabees. Right, so I can't say that it's unique to Pesach, but it's unique to Pesach in the Torah. People came to Moshe right before Passover in Sefer Bamidbar, Parshat Baal Oscha, and they said, Moshe, we have a problem. We are impure. The Passover observance involves eating something you can't eat when you're impure. You could be impure for Sukkot and Shavuot. Big deal. There's nothing about that requires purity, except if you want to make a pilgrimage and walk on the Temple Mount. You have to be in a state of purity. But Pesach is different. Pesach, everybody in Israel has to eat from a sacrifice. Kachim. Kachim can only be eaten when you're pure. So the people said, why should we lose out on this beautiful mitzvah of Pesach because we happen to be impure now? Right? So it's interesting that the Gemara in Seches Pesachim identifies the impurity. Nadav and Avihu died on the 8th of Nisan. Some people had to take their bodies out and they buried them. So those people asked, you get it? 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Erev Pesach was their seventh day of ritual purity. You have to purify yourself for 7 days. And then they wanted to know, it was a pretty interesting question. Can we have someone slaughter the Korban Pesach today for us, even though at the time of the slaughtering we can't eat it because our 7 days aren't up, but by the time we do eat it, because the Korban Pesach, the Passover sacrifice, is eaten at night, by the time we eat it, our 7 days will be over. That was their question. All right? Others say that it was not the Nadav and Avihu, it was the bones of Yosef that defiled them. Or people died, you know, some people died, right? And then some people were death defiled, right? So they asked this question, and Moshe did not have the answer on the moment, right? This was not covered in the laws of Passover in the Book of Shemot, right? So Moshe responded, I'm going to ask God, because it already said in the Book of Vayikra that you can't eat a sacrifice in a state of ritual impurity. So the people said, okay, it's not a problem for all other sacrifices. If I want to bring a Thanksgiving sacrifice, Thanksgiving offering, I'm not going to bring it while I'm impure. I'll wait till afterwards. But Korban Pesach, the Passover sacrifice, has a specific date. You have to bring it on the 14th and then not on the 16th. So today, I'm stuck in a state of impurity. What am I supposed to do, Moshe? So Moshe responded that you have a way out of this. You have a month from now you can do this. There's something called Pesach Sheni. Okay? Now, what is the excuse for eating Pesach Sheni? Now, there's a whole chapter in Maseches Pesachim on this topic. From the Torah, it would appear the only excuse for The only reason why you might get a month off and do it next month is because you couldn't eat it now because you were impure. Comes the Torah to add another reason. The Torah adds another reason, and then the Gemara adds multiple reasons. Okay? Right. The Torah adds another reason. The people who asked this question did not have this excuse. But the Torah adds another excuse if you're too far. Right? If you live in Haifa, and that's too far of a distance, today you get on a bus, but then it was maybe too far of a distance. You're not going to tell people that don't live there. No, Asher lives there, Don lives there, Naftali, Zvulun, they live up north, and that may be too far for them to get to Jerusalem. Right? Doesn't mean you can't, but if it's too far. Now, what's considered too far? Most people in this room would be amazed. I would say you'd be amazed if what you see what the Gemara says is considered too far. Right? I would think too far is, well, Netanya, Caesarea. I mean, what's too far? What's considered too far? I might have thought any place in Israel isn't too far. Too far is Ethiopia, it's China. Right? So comes the Gemara to say, it's an amazing thing.
Isn't that 2,000
amos, is it? Yeah, it's very little. It's like a little more than that, it seems. But Mevaseret, it's like even in...
Is that like the length of the Queensborough Bridge? Like the Queensborough Bridge is a little longer than 2,000
amos? They say 2,000 amos. Yeah. Never heard that connection. But it's really not too far. Okay, it's
how, you know, far does it say?
A little, like from the edge of Yerushalayim. Now, look, today, municipal Yerushalayim really spreads out.
Right.
Really far.
A Jersey tunnel.
Right? It really goes, it spreads out in all directions. But right. I'm not talking about that. Then Yerushalayim was much smaller than it is today.
So did it say it was? Is it, what are the words?
Yeah, it's not more than, it's like a kilometer.
Wow.
I mean, you should be able to walk a kilometer, for goodness sakes. Right, but anyway, I'll quibble about that. But there's a chapter in Maseches Pesachim that gives all kinds of other, if you have a broken leg. Mm. All right? There are all kinds of excuses for not making it to Yerushalayim. You have a young child at home. I can't, the child is too young to travel. Right?
Kilometer.
Okay. So these are excuses for getting another month to do it, a month later. Right? Now there are some shuls that celebrate Pesach Sheni. Mm-hmm. Do you have a minute? Some people eat matzah, dafka, mm-hmm. Pesach Sheni. They'll make sure to eat a sandwich with matzah on the 14th of Iyar.
But they don't get rid of it.
Okay. 14th of the year is 11 days from now. No. Even, by the way, even in biblical times, when you are eating the Karban Pesach on the 14th of the year, right?
Yeah.
You're allowed to have chametz in your house.
Okay.
Right? You can't eat chametz with that Karban Pesach.
Okay.
You have to eat it with matzah and maror.
Okay.
But the Gemara says, yesh chametz beveso. You don't have to purge through your house of chametz again. And that, and Pesach Sheni is only one day, not 7 days.
Oh,
right. Finish that one day. Okay. And some shuls have some liturgies. They actually say certain prayers for that. I'll tell you, our shul minhag, I'm sorry to tell you, is to say Tachanun on Pesach Sheni. Some shuls refrain from saying Tachanun because they look for any excuse not to say Tachanun. All right. So Tachanun is there any napkins there? I've been around all day looking for tissues.
Tissues? I think
that's
right there.
So even so let's say you do celebrate Pesach. Are you also supposed to celebrate the Pesach at Sheni?
So there's some shuls today that celebrate Pesach Sheni today by not saying Tachanun, by omitting certain sad prayers from the liturgy on that day, by not allowing a mourner to lead the service, things like that. And I would tell you that that's certainly not our custom, and I'm going to explain why it's not our custom. Because Pesach Sheni is not something to celebrate. Pesach Sheni means someone couldn't do something. I'm not saying by any fault of their own. The Pesach Sheni means that because that person didn't bring the Korban Pesach on time. I would tell you who shouldn't say Tachanun on Pesach Sheni. What do you think? Not today, not today. In biblical times. Someone who's bringing the Pesach Sheni on the 14th of Iyar, that day, that person shouldn't say Tachanun. You know what I'm saying? That's a holiday for that person. I would argue even in biblical times. Even in times where we have a temple, where some people are bringing the Pesach Sheni, right? People who are not bringing it because they brought it a month before should say Tachanun. Certainly today, no one's bringing a Pesach Sheni today. You follow it? Just because someone didn't bring it in time?
But weren't the korbanot in place of tefillah? So how would they be saying Tachanun?
I would tell you that tefillah, Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov established tefillah. The times of the prayers are the times of the tefillah.
But tefillah was not yet formalized.
I'm not sure that everybody agrees with that. I think Ramban probably agrees with it. But the Rambam says, "Ulavdo b'chol levavchem." Serve God with your heart. How? People prayed. You see people praying in the Bible. To formalize them with a time, that is from the korbanot.
Yeah, so.
But just pray any time. When you're in need to pray is just fulfillment of a Torah law. Even the Ramban agrees with that. We see people, Chana was praying, that's something people could do on a regular basis. To pray every day and once in the morning, once in the afternoon, once in the evening, that seems to be something that Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov established, but it only became set with the replacement for the sacrifices. Be that as it may, this is one and the same. If I may just mention that Shavuos is only a one-day holiday in Israel, right? But it's as opposed to Sukkot and Pesach, which are seven-day holidays, right? Now, except when Pesach and Sukkot fall on a Shabbos, there are special holiday korbanot to be brought on the first day of the holidays, right? Now, on Pesach and Sukkot, if you didn't bring it on the first day, you have all week to do so. It's called Tashlumim L'Rishon. Is that it? There's a discussion whether it's Tashlumim L'Rishon or each day has a potential to possibly bring that. There would be a nafkamina would be if a person was totally exempt on the first day because he was either a katan or he was a shota on that day, or whatever it is, if he was totally exempt, then if it's tashlumim for the first day, then if you were pater for the first day, you're pater the rest of the holiday. Anyway, most people who are bringing on the fourth day or the sixth day are because they didn't get around to bringing it on the first day. Let me take that. Shavuos has the same rule, even though Shavuos is a one-day holiday. You ever hear of this? That you could have brought that holiday offering even 6 days after Shavuos, when it's no longer Shavuos. Right? So what do some shuls have the custom? You don't say Tachanun for 7 days after Shavuos. Why? Because you have, it's a 7 day possibility to bring a korban. And we, this shul say poppycock to that.
I think the
article
says that.
First of all, it's not brought down in Shulchan Aruch. And we say that's nonsense. Just because someone didn't bring his korban on time, we should not say Tachanun? Even in biblical, even in temple times, I admit, the person who's bringing the sacrifice on that day, 4 days after Shavuos, shouldn't say Tachanun. Because he's bringing the sacrifice that day. That's like a yontif for him. Right? But to say that because someone didn't bring it on time in biblical times, that we shouldn't say Tachanun today? That's crazy.
Basic question, what is Tachanun?
Okay, I'm sorry. Tachanun is a sorrowful prayer that we say after at the end of the davening. You're supposed to get down on your like that to say it, and there's some statements in there about crying. The Torah says if you don't cry when you're saying Tachanun, you're not really saying it.
Sorry.
It says because it says in Pirkei Avos that you're supposed to imagine every day that today's your last day.
Mm-hmm.
For just a moment. Imagine if today, you only have today to live. What would you do today to make it meaningful? Mm-hmm. And then when you realize, I'm not dying today, you should be joyful. Mm-hmm. Right? So the Torah says that's what you're supposed to do when you're saying Tachanun. Because there's a pasuk in Tachanun, Ki ein ba'moves zichrecha b'sh'ol mi yodeloch. chapter 6 of Tehillim. It says, there's God, if I would die, I wouldn't be able to praise you. There's no praises of you in Sheol, in the pit. So that's the moment where you can imagine. So we shouldn't be saying that on a festive day.
In
some communities, they look for any excuse. it's a Rebbe's yard site, anything is an excuse for.
Did you have this in Hallel? Where you mentioned so?
I'm sorry?
In Hallel, we say.
Lo hameisim yahalleluyah.
Right, so they have the same idea, but it's in a happy.
Okay, all right, but the whole thing is all right. It's part of. Here, but we don't say that every day.
What
about vidui? Vidui is not something we. Some people do say vidui every day.
Mm-hmm.
They do this. They clap.
Mm-hmm.
The minhag used to be that this show, but they were doing it too fast. I just said it's better not to do it.
Right?
Because a vidui is something you're supposed to do right before dying, right?
Yeah,
if we're in a state to be able to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So we've established. Pesach is the most commonly represented holiday in the Tanakh. It's an unusual situation that we have a do-over, right? So, in the Torah, this time period of the year between Pesach and Shavuos was a very joyful time. It's called V'kutz Rechem Es Ketzir Arzachem. This is the time where Israel is putting forth its harvest. And when God's graces shine upon us and give us the rain we need, it's an extremely fertile land. There's much more ability to put forth the produce it needs than the amount of people that lived there in the time of the Tanakh. So it's a joyful time. And it remains so throughout biblical history. Now, as a result of the fall of many thousands of Rabbi Akiva's students, the time between Pesach and Shavuos has become a sad time.
Yeah.
Where, I see in YU now, almost all my students are sporting beards. Even at Ramaz, the kids who grow a beard, my old grade class, they all like to do it. Because for them it's like, because otherwise you're not allowed to grow a beard in high school. Yeah. They don't let you. So this is their chance for, and they can feel religious at the same time, you know.
Yes.
We'll see if they shave a lot of home or not. But anyway, so we're growing beards like sitting Shiva or Shloshim for the students of Rebbe Akiva at this time of year. So,
I'm sorry, Rabbi. I didn't catch that it's a joyful time. Between Pesach and Shavuos, but it's a sad time.
But in the biblical times, it was joyful, and it turned to a sad time with the advent in the 2nd century CE for the death of thousands and thousands of Rabbi Akiva students.
Okay.
It says 24,000 students. Mm-hmm. Now, in the Talmud, it says that they died because Shalom Nohagu Kavod Zevoze. They did not have proper respect for one another.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I know I've heard so much Torah from this, from the greatest minds, of what was wrong and why they behaved this way and what tragedies it led to. I have to tell you that it's a very spurious citation. It's very cryptic. It says to keep a mourning from Pesach, one source says, until Shavuos, one says a half a month till Shavuos, which is the day after Lag BaOmer, not Lag BaOmer, but the day after. The Sephardic custom is to observe till the 34th of the Omer, to observe more. Be that as it may, I saw a Xaviat, a manuscript, a handwritten manuscript of this Gemara that indicates that what took the boys was not that they didn't have kavod for one another in the base of Medrash, which means that they were nasty to each other and they were studying Torah, but it didn't refine them. They weren't good people, right? That can lead to a destruction of a generation. Because what are you doing if you're representing the spirituality of your people by being in the study hall, but it doesn't refine you and it doesn't make you a better person? People will consider the Torah anathema. They won't study it. So I must tell you that the source that I saw was that they didn't have respect for one another, not in the base medrash, on the battlefield. Why would they be in the battlefield? Why would Rabbi Akiva's students be in the battlefield? Because, and this is also a bit of controversy, Rabbi Akiva, according to the Rambam, he mentions this a few times, supported the Bar Kokhba revolts. That's very well attested. Right? I'll only give you the historical framework. We are in the year about 130 CE. 130. 60 years before that, approximately, is when the temple was destroyed. During that time, there were certainly rebellions in Israel. There were zealots who would kill anybody who tried to make terms with the Romans, and certainly that was the situation. However, the rabbinic position, the position of the head of the Sanhedrin at that time, was to try to accommodate Rome, to make accommodations with Rome, to make peace with Rome. That was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, famous Gemara in Maseches Gittin, where he had to resort to subterfuge in order to even make some kind of an entreaty to the Romans to even suggest making peace, because had the zealots learned that he was attempting to do so, they would have killed him. They apparently tried to kill him, but they were convinced not to at the last minute. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, the head of the Sanhedrin at that time, considered accommodation to be the proper thing. 60 years later, however, with the Hadrianic persecutions, where anyone giving smicha or getting smicha would be killed, the practice of Judaism was outlawed. This is where they renamed Israel Palestine after the Philistines and renamed Jerusalem Aliyah Capitolina, like a new capital city. They minted coins called Judea Capta. Judea has been captured, but those are older coins. This is where, 60 years later, that the rabbinic leaders considered there was no accommodation with this. It's one thing to try to come to terms with a vicious ruler where you feel it's better for us, but there's no accommodation with this at this time. So Rabbi Akiva felt the boys have to leave the study hall, like, and go to like a Hesder yeshiva and go and fight. But these guys, you know, you can't just send students to the front lines and say, here are weapons and here's a shield and, you know, and here's a bow and arrow. They didn't have respect for the command necessary in battle. Lo nagu kavod ze bo ze means they were not good soldiers, and thousands of them died in battle.
So not as punishment, you're saying?
Not as punishment, because they weren't there. But you've probably heard many a drush over the years about, oh, the students of Rabbi Akiva, they were so miserable, they hated each other, they were respectful to each other. That's, you see, so the question, the obvious question I have to raise now, see if you can anticipate it or answer it, is why would the Talmud write that they didn't have respect for each other if it was a battlefield question? The answer to that is obvious.
If you don't have respect, the basement for Shiva on the battlefield.
Okay, that's a Hashkafic answer, and it's a good one. But I think it was the censor. The Jews did not want the Persians or Romans or whoever else is ruling us at the time to know that our rabbinic teachers are sending their students out to fight against you and to rebel against you.
Oh, that's interesting.
They want to give, you know, after all, these are the authors of the Talmud. So the authors of the Talmud don't want to come across as troublemakers to the ruling class. So it's better that they read 200 years from now. The better that they read that what caused the death of all these students was that it's our moral compass that teaches us that when you don't have respect for one another, some disease is going to spread or something like that, rather than intimate that the Jews sent their students out to fight a battle. Jews tended throughout history, there were of course great exceptions to this, but when a Jew was often just a pawn between different rivals, and you know, the Muslims and Christians are fighting it out over Israel, each one are killing the Jews and the other. But the Jews were powerless to defend themselves. So the Jew finds himself in this uncomfortable situation, but often sided with the status quo. Status quo is at least something you know, right? This does not mean, let's say, in 1776, there was a revolution against the status quo. The Jews, like any other minority people, there were some who supported the status quo, which means that they were loyalists, and there were some who were patriots. It seems that more Jews joined the patriots. But there was a Jewish community here in New York at the time, and they like everybody, you know, Manhattan was exiled. Right, Manhattan was taken over. So, but here the Jews decided, no, the status quo does not work for us, and we fought. So this is the sad time that comes now, and there's also another issue that is just germane to this time of year. Is the concept of Chodosh and Yoshan. It's important to know this time of year for these concepts. Chodosh means something new. Yoshan means something old.
Right? The wheat.
It has to do with wheat or all grains. Mm-hmm. But when you go into a pizza store and it says, our pizza is made from Yoshan flour, right? It's probably an extraneous sign for New York, for America, because grain grows in so many different places in this country that when you go into your local market and buy a fresh loaf of bread, that's made from flour that grew from in the ground about 2 years ago.
Okay.
All right. So here is the rule of Chodosh and Yoshan in the Torah. I'll say it as simply as possible. Any grain that took root after the second day of Passover, now that's usually not wheat because wheat isn't growing yet, it's barley. But any grain that took root after the second day of Pesach is forbidden to be eaten until the next second day of Pesach. Okay? Right. So now everything is Yashan. Right after Pesach, everything is Yashan. Nothing is, you know what I'm saying? You're not getting bread from something that grew on the second day of Pesach here. Right? It's just now. Right? But America has so many different climates that different crops grow all over the place here. Right? You know what I'm saying? Some are in the summer, some are in the winter. You know, it's like you have things that grow all year. Right? So, plus there's another idea that Chodosh and Yashan, while it does have something to do with the earth and the ground, usually laws like this, like Shemitah, Revai, you know, Orla, are only kept according to the Torah in Israel, but others hold no. Chodesh and Yoshin is like pork. Pork is not just in Israel. You can't eat. You have to eat Yoshin even outside of Israel. Got it? Okay. So that's why the pizza store has only Yoshin flour, but it gives you an added sense of an assuredness that, oh, I'll pay extra for this pizza because it's Yoshin. But here's the problem: you can't be sure of this. You can't be sure that your flour in America, you know, but go buy gold medal flour that was harvested 2 years ago, right? Because there's so much of it. All right, but you can't be sure of that. I believe there's only one organization that even gives a hashgacha, or like that you can buy Yoshan matzahs. The only way to get Yoshan products is to go to a bakery that says we make on every Wednesday Yashan products, right? But that you will not find on a Lender's Bagels. This is, you know, Ashkocha, where they guarantee that it's that. Okay, all right, be that as it may, you can make your own flour to be Yashan by putting it in a plastic bag and waiting until next year to use it. Okay, so with that in mind, you see what I'm doing. I'm doing anything that's nogea to this time of year. I would like you to open up to Amos chapter 8. You will find it after Yecheskel, Perches Pasuk He. Okay.
Amos.
Amos chapter 8, verse 5. So it should be on that page. Right there. Okay. So it says, Shimu zos hashoafim evyon. Listen to these words, you who take advantage of the poor. V'lashbis aniye aretz. And to put an end to those humble of the land, or those impoverished of the land. Listen to his complaint. I hear what you're saying. Mosai ya'avor hachodesh v'nashbira ba'shever. Now, I'm going to read the pshat of this, but then I'm going to give you a second interpretation, which is nogea to us. He says, we can't wait for Rosh Chodesh to be over so we can sell grain. V'hashabbos v'niftach habar. We can't wait for Shabbos to be over so we can open up our stores. Lahaktin eifa lahagdil shekel aves mosne mirma. In order to cheat with the weights and make them bigger or smaller depending on whether the consumer or the storekeeper. Now I think you may know if you've studied some ancient philosophy that Aristotle, Socrates, Plato had a very very negative picture of commerce. They did not like people who, for them, the main occupation was to work the land, and grow through the sweat of your brow your food, and support yourself. Maybe raise a few animals and get their skins for clothing. But commerce is for unrefined people. Right. So Amos here is railing against people who take advantage in the marketplace. So Aristotle and Socrates and the like, they felt that once you're in the marketplace, the stage between doing regular business and moving to cheating and justifying it is almost an inevitable passage of one stage to another. So, okay, the Torah has great consternation and calumny against someone who cheats on his weights. The Torah reminds us of so often, my presence leaves a place where you're cheating on your scales. And the Torah tries to level the playing field between the haves and have-nots by giving quite extreme taxation on everybody. The tithes, and Trumas Maestros, and Meister Ani and Leket Shikcha and Peya and Shemitah and don't charge interest. And it's trying to teach what the Sefer HaChinuch calls Vatranut. Right? Can you translate Vatranut? Levater.
Giving up too.
To be magnanimous with your money, basically, right? Right. So it tries to teach you that look, if you're not charging interest, you're not going to steal, right? Interest people justify. No, interest was such a dirty business, right? That's why the Christians forced it upon us. They didn't want to charge it. They wouldn't lend each other. So the Jew will do it for you, right? So almost, not just here, but in a few places in his book, he rails against the commerce. And I want to tell you that we have a very different picture of this. Very different picture. Don't avoid commerce. Adaraba. And be involved in it, but regulate it. Make sure that you're in charge. That doesn't take over you, and you start cheating on weights and sizes and measures, right?
And can I just interject something? Charging interest could be viewed as taking advantage of poor people, because poor people are going to have the loans and pay the interest, so it could be a negative aspect.
Absolutely, but there's another law like this, that in the Shemitah year, every 7 years, all loans are canceled. Mm. Now, when loans are canceled, poor people may suffer. Why?
Because no one's going to want to lend them.
No one's going to want to lend them. Why should I lend you money if it's going to be canceled? Mm. So an institution called Prosbol, or Heter Prosbol, where you can transfer the loan to like a Beit Din or a corporate entity, and you're not collecting the loan, they're collecting it for you. This was meant to protect the poor, Mm-hmm. Now, you see, the Torah has three laws regarding this in Shemitah. It says, you can't collect the loan, right? You can't charge interest. You can't even charge the principal in the Shemitah year. And it says, and don't refrain from loaning because of this rule. It says that in Vayikra. All right? So what we have today is called a Heter Iska. Heter Iska. If you need money, so you're going to borrow $10,000 from me, and next year you're going to pay me back $10,500, but not because you're paying me interest, you're just paying me dividends on an investment. I know it's a little sketchy, but it works. In other words, we want to enhance as much as possible I'll say the word I want to use, commerce, because and this is a beautiful medrash. It says that when Yaakov, on his way home, it says that he stopped off in Sukkot, and it says Vayichan es pnei ha'ir. Vayichan es pnei ha'ir. The pshat is, what is Vayichan?
Encamped.
Osam machane besoch ha'ir, right? Instead, Rashi cites Bereishis Rabbah that says Vayichan means Matzachin. He made chain to that place. So what did he do? He did three things. Tikain matbeot. He taught them to use coinage. Tikain shvakot. He taught them to have a marketplace. And once you have a marketplace and a lot of people gathering together, then you have to have public hygiene. You don't want to spread problems with that. So he tikain merchatzaot. Misakain public bathhouses for people to maintain hygiene. So, according to this, this is a medrash. Did Yaakov actually do this? It doesn't matter. The rabbis thought he did it, so it means that it's an important Jewish ideal that we should set up a marketplace. We should set up coinage, right? Just be careful that the coins are not covered with dross, and that your wine is not mixed with water. And does it sound familiar? It's Yeshayahu chapter 1. Right? Kastecha yusigim, yayin mahul, right? You're cheating the people. You're putting water in the wine. You're putting a gold cover on top of a brass coin, and you're right. So I'm telling you all this because of a new interpretation I'd like to give to these psukim I just read in Amos. But furthermore, the definition of people involved in commerce is shulchani. Shulchani is a money changer. And chenvoni is a grocer. Do you see what word is in both of them?
Chen.
Vayichan es pnei ha'ir. We believe firmly that the more commerce there is amongst people, the more they will interact, the more they'll be friendly, and be careful, because the more you will be enticed to cheat. Just be in control. We're not afraid to do X because we feel it's inevitable that it'll lead to Y, like Aristotle and Socrates said. Engage in that. People need that. Why should they have to kill their own animal to get shoes? No. You kill 40 animals, make a shoe store, and let everybody in town buy your shoes. Right? But be careful. We have rules in the Talmud about monopolies, about taking advantage of other people's business, hafech becharara or hasagas gvul. These are all amazing rules. Long before Gompers and long before the unions, we have in Bava Basra and above Metzia rules that guide the marketplace. So now let's see what so he's saying here, just in the marketplace, make sure that you don't cheat. But in the first statement where it says, when will Rosh Chodesh be over, when will Shabbos be over? In the very least, they're observing these days, right? They're not keeping the store open on Shabbos. They just can't wait for Shabbos to be over so they can open the store. That's half bad, right? You know, at least they're keeping Shabbos. It, by the way, as Rashi points out, it shows that in biblical times they kept Rosh Chodesh. Who says you can't open your store on Rosh Chodesh? Apparently, in biblical times, they Rosh Chodesh was considered a holier day than we consider it now. And you see, Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh are juxtaposed many times in the Bible. Not two or three times, many times. Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh together.
You're implying that Rosh Chodesh is many times as sacred as Shabbos in the Bible?
It many times considered, it's juxtaposed to be considered, if not as sacred, but in the same ballpark, so to say. So,
okay.
Right? Now the Shulchan Aruch says it's a woman's holiday, right? The women should get off on Rosh Chodesh. You hear that?
Yes.
Okay, so but now I'd like to do a whole different interpretation of this pasuk, which relates to this time of year. That's why I'm doing it. Ready? He says, listen to all of you people who are abusing one another. And he says, Lemor Mosai Ya'avor HaChodesh V'Nashpira Shever V'HaShabbos V'Niftach Abor. This is what it means. Not when will the Chodesh be over. Ya'avor means when will it pass. No.
Ibur
Chodesh. When will we have a leap year? Why did these cheating commercial men what love leap years? Because if you have an extra month, think about it. But the simple rules of supply and demand, when you have more of something, it's cheaper. When you have more demand of something and there's less of it, it's going to be more expensive. The closer you get to Nisan in any year, the more expensive grain is going to be. That's just the way it works. Unless you had the Gemara is very serious about allowing the marketplace to create its own level. Right? Some people, you're not allowed to have collusion to overcharge, not allowed to overcharge more than 1/6. Right? That's fair. Otherwise, if you can't overcharge something, you have to give some kind of profit margin for your rent that you have to pay, and then whatever food that you might not be able to sell, and you have to absorb or something, right? So if he says Mosai Yavor Chodesh, the people are saying, oh, I can't wait till we have a leap year, so that when there's a second Adar, the second day of Pesach is happening a month later, right? And then the Yashan flour becomes more and more expensive. So it's this time of year. Now, since we're talking about a second Adar, I'd like you to please turn to Divrei Hayamim, Perek Lamed, Mamish, the very end of the Bible. Just only a few chapters left in the Bible. Perek Lamed, Divrei Hayamim Bet, Perek Lamed, Divrei Hayamim Bet, chapter 30, verse 10. Actually, verse 13. Yeah. Chapter 30, verse 13. It should be like right at the very end of the Bible.
Chapter 30, verse
13. Right, that should be that page.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 30, verse 13. Vayesfu Yerushalayim Amrav Lasos es Chag HaMatzos. People gathered in Jerusalem, a large gathering, in order to do Chag HaMatzos. Bachodesh Hasheni. Whoa, what a story. They kept Pesach in the second month. Pesach is in the first month. So this looks like a total Pesach Sheni story, right? Wow, did you know that there's a Pesach Sheni story in Suvim? I thought it's just in the Torah. 13. Right?
13.
You see it? Kohola Rav Ma'od. Wow, why would so many people be doing Pesach in Iyar? Kohol Rav Ma'od? Well, it means because when Chizkiyahu became king, there was such a disorder. There was such a disorder in what his father had done. Who was Chizkiyahu's father?
Nash.
Nash is his son.
His son.
But let me tell you, Chizkiyahu had a Russia sandwich. His father was almost as bad as Achaz. Achaz, right? His father was awful and his son was awful. But he was very good. Okay, so his father had caused such a disarray in the Jewish and traditional observances, right? That when Chizkiyahu became king and he wanted to keep Pesach, so many of them were just oblivious to what they needed to do or didn't care. So Chizkiyahu established a return to the old order.
Okay.
Right? So they gathered in the second month because apparently they couldn't do it in the first month. Let's read, continue, verse 14. ויקומו ויסירו את המזבחות אשר בירושלים ואת כל המקדשות יסירו וישליכו לנחל קדרון. They had to get rid of all of his father's idolatrous shrines. He had them even in Jerusalem. Okay. וישחטו הפסח ב-14 לחודש השני. I mean, my goodness, this is perfect for our class today. They slaughtered the Korban Pesach on the 14th day of the second month. והכהנים והלויים נחלמו ויסקדשו ויביאו עולות בית השם. The Kohanim and Leviim were what's nichlamu? Usually means embarrassed. Maybe I think it's more like confounded or
confused.
No, klima, busho, klima, but what's your English translation? Do you have it? It could be that there's so many people that the Leviim were like
humiliated.
Okay, and they brought many burnt offerings. They followed the rules of Moshe, the man of God. Hakohanim zorkim es adam miyad leviim. Okay. And it tells all the people that came down to do this. Alright? Look, it says very clearly. These were all the people who were not ritually pure at the time of Pesach. They all offered their offerings. They ate the Korban Pesach not according to the Torah. What's wrong? I thought you have a do-over. Kispalel Yechizkiyahu aleihem lemor Hashem atov yechaper ba'ad. Chizkiyahu prayed for God to cure them. Now there's an element of Korban Pesach that we derive from the Torah's story. We didn't do it in Parshas Veloscha. That if more than half the people are ritually impure, you know what they do? They bring it that way, even though they're impure. The reason why, and when I started this year, the people were told wait till next month is because there were only a few of them. If you have 5, 10 people, all right, wait till Iyar. But if you have 3 million people who are impure, they should all do it in Nisan. So what's this about Chodesh Hasheni? Have you ever heard of a resolution to this? The Talmud says that Chizkiyahu offered this Korban Pesach in Nisan. So why is it called Chodesh Hasheni? Correct. There's another way to deal with this if you're afraid that everyone is going to be impure. Although impurities don't usually come a month in advance, but sometimes you know impurity is coming, for whatever reason. There's another thing you could do to get what would be anyway ER is to add another Adar. Right? You're familiar that Adar sometimes has 2 months? So if you add that, obviously you can't do that once Nisan comes, right? But if you're still an Adar, you just add another Adar. So the Talmud says that that's actually what Chizkiyahu did. So what was wrong? What was wrong is that he did it on the, you know, like just now, we had 2 days Rosh Chodesh, right? The first day of Rosh Chodesh is the 30th day of the previous month. Second day of Rosh Chodesh is the first day of the next month.
So he did it on the first day?
So he did it on the first day of Rosh Chodesh, which was the 30th of Adar, and he added another Adar after that. And Yeshayahu said, no, you can't. It's already Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And he says, no, it's not. It's the 30th of Adar. He goes, I know, but we keep the 30th day of any month. 30th day after the previous month is always Rosh Chodesh, whether it's the first of the next month or the 30th of the old month. Right? The reason for this, just because we're going to do this two months from now, the reason for this is because it takes the moon 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and 3.5 seconds to circle the earth. This cheshbon that the rabbis were working with is 0.5 second off.
Oh my gosh.
In 100 years.
Wow.
So the Kuzari writes that there's only one way that they could have come up with this, is through prophecy. There's no way Hashem told Moshe, HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem, he showed him, this is what you do. The cheshbon, the rabbis didn't call it seconds, they called it chalokim. Right? You're familiar when we announced the Rosh Chodesh, they say chalokim. Chalek is 1,080 over 3,600ths of an hour.
Oh my gosh.
There are 1,080 chalokim in an hour, which means that it's a little more than 3 seconds. You get it? You hear it? Right? So while the Gregorian calendar had to fix itself, and it's getting messed up again, the seasons seem to be, I don't know, other things are.
Yeah.
But the Gregorian calendar had to be fixed because they were, because it's not 365 and a quarter days in the year, it's 365 days, 5 hours, 48 minutes, and I believe 54 seconds.
So
your 11 minutes and 6 seconds is being lost every single year.
Wow, that's a lot. Yeah.
Right? So after 1,000 years, that's quite a bit.
Yeah.
Every 100 years, you know that they... every 100 years, they have a February without 29 days. Or it's supposed to be 29 days, they make it 28 to make up for those 11 minutes. You get 11 point something minutes, adds up to almost a day after 100 years.
Right.
So Pope Gregor needed to add something like 12, 13 days. I'm saying they went...
By the time they figured it out?
Yeah, they went to sleep on, I think it was in October they did it, right? 1563.
Mm-hmm.
They went to sleep October 1st, and the next day was October 14th or something. Yeah, the birthday in between, sorry.
Stay young.
Yeah, really? Engaging.
So The crazy thing was that every country took it all at the same time.
Oh, really? That's
so you had all over Europe, you had one country, it's October 15th, and it was just going on. Countries were 10, 12 days off. But the lunar calendar has not needed to be fixed. It's amazing. Right? We've never had to change anything like this. Okay, so that's the Chiddush of Divrei Yamim. Is not that they kept Pesach in Iyar that year, they kept Pesach in Nisan. It would have been, practically speaking, the same exact day. It's right. Just that they kept it in Nisan because they had an extra Adar. Right?
Yeah.
That's really how the Gemara does this ingeniously to work out these Pesachim here. Mm. Okay? All right. That's what we do with Pesach Sheni. It's going to be next week. Please God. And if you are davening with us, we will be saying Tachlis.
If you don't want to say it, go somewhere else.
Today's the 3rd. 10th is Wednesday, 11th, Thursday. It's a week from Sunday. A week from this Sunday, the 29th. It's going to be Pesach Sheni.